Welcome back to another episode of Two Pre-Sales and a Pod. You're joined today by myself, Mark Green. A bit of an introduction in a moment for Mark McKinley, and Ben Pierce joins us from Elevated Light. It's wonderful to have you on, Ben. It's been a while since we've been on the airwaves. Oh, lots of things. Christmas has happened. We are in 2024. But we've got some exciting news to share with you, and with that, I'd like to introduce co-host of Two Pre-Sales in a Pod. That's right, it's 75 pre-sales in a pod now, but yeah, Mark, I'm sure that many people know you already, but why don't you do a little bit of introduction, and then Ben will come on to you and talk about the topic for today.
Sure. So thanks very much, Mark, and I, as you know, have been a friend of the show, have done many miles walking my dog, listening to you guys talk about all things pre-sales, and loved what you've done. And yeah, as a result of it, we've decided to expand the hosting of it. And I'd love to be a part of it and giving back to the pre-sales community. With a couple of decades in pre-sales, would love to be a part of it. So very much looking forward to this next chapter of the podcast.
Well, it's wonderful to have you here. And as Don Carmichael, great, you know, great of our world, takes a step back from Two Pre-Sales in a Pod. Of course, feel free to still go and message him on LinkedIn and find out what he's doing there. But we're very excited to have you, Ben, join us today to talk about various things which we were discussing. As classic with Two Pre-Sales in a Pod, we were chatting away before we hit record and thought, right, we better actually hit record so people can hear what we're saying. introduce yourself. Where are you from? What do you do?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me. It's lovely to be here. So my name is Ben Pierce. My background is I spent 20 years roughly working at Microsoft, and about 10 of those years was in individual contributor roles, deep technical roles, and then probably 10, 11 years, something like that, in people leadership roles. And the last 5 or 6 years of that, I was leading technical pre-sales teams, particularly that were selling Azure. So that's what I did until about 18 months ago, when I decided to set up my own company, Elevated You. And now what I do is I help people in the tech world with their human skills. So how they influence people, how they tell stories, how they drive change and transformation. Basically, all the stuff that's really hard in the tech world that's not the technology itself.
Okay. And it's great that you've taken a step forward to help other people be better. Tell us about your journey there.
Well, so I think the first thing is I've always loved tech. And so I've always loved tech and wanted to stay in the tech world. But as I became a people leader, it became clear that the value that I was really bringing was not helping anybody with their tech. They were far better at that than me. But what I was able to help people do is maybe think about how they influence the people that were responsible for making decisions, how we made an emotional connections with people, how we made really complicated things a bit more simple. And I spent a lot of time coaching people and helping people, and probably found that I was enjoying that a little bit more than the deep tech, and so sort of drifted that way until I thought, right, let's take the leap and let's spend my whole life doing this.
So that sounds fantastic, Ben. And one of the things that just sprung to my mind there was that obviously a company like Microsoft, they're pretty big, right? They're pretty big, and in the world of pre-sales, given that's what we're talking about, we've kind of always talked about this hard skills and soft skills. So to your point, the hard skills in a technology company like Microsoft, there'll be abundance of.
Yep.
What was the sort of prevalence of soft skills? Where would you as a pre-sales person go to hone that craft, if you like?
Yeah. Well, so I'd say the first thing was our recruitment process very much took that into account. So people that were coming into these types of roles, we were very much screening for that. You know, so in our manager type interview, we'd be looking very much for those sort of soft or human skills. And then one of the interviews was actually a presentation where we had to a role play as if you were presenting as a customer. So the first thing I'd say is that was really important right from the get-go, you know, in getting in who we were bringing in as employees. And then, yeah, loads of readiness. I mean, all of my information now, I will say, is about 18 months old, because that was when I left. But, you know, there was a great focus. I went on some amazing training courses, and Microsoft invested in me really, really heavily to help develop that. Because if I think about, you know, particularly the early cloud wars, I guess, as they were named, you know, when you had, you know, Azure versus AWS, and then you've got GCP coming in and now Oracle coming, you know, the early cloud wars, lots of the tech was relatively straightforward. The challenge was breaking through the boundaries of, right, we've got to work with the procurement team. Which cloud do they want to procure? What commercial deal are they going to, right? What technology does what they want? What about the business? What do they think about? So literally it wasn't the tech, it was getting to those people and convincing those people that we were spending all our time doing.
Well, it sounds like a wealth of experience that you've gained there. And certainly, yes, the cloud wars. I can't get that out of my head now. I remember because I was at Infor when we were moving Cloud Suite, well, to Cloud Suite, from lots of on-premises scenario things to these cloud-based tools. And yeah, it was cloud wars. So the topic for today really is, could be described as how to check yourself at the door as a leader, or put another way, how to give feedback to people when they're not doing things the way that they should be. And of course, that opinion of what they should be doing has been grown from years of experience. And of course, we're all right. But there's new versions of right all the time, okay? And one of the things that I'd like to cover, or that we'd like to cover, as we discussed, is, Ben, that ability to communicate with people and craft stories and that art almost, there's good ways of doing it. Yeah. And so much so that you've now formed a whole company to help people do that.
Yeah.
As leaders, as Mark was discussing earlier, if you go in with an idea of how something should happen, is that giving the people that work for you or you're working with an opportunity to explore their own unique styles, or you just want to make more versions of yourself? I think there's a balance, but what do you think?
Well, I guess, you know, I break this into two ways to think about it. Firstly, there is, you know, you started off there, you know, check yourself, you know, is this feedback that really needs to be given? You know, so that's the first bit. And maybe that's a whole discussion that we could have there. I don't know if you want to do that first or second. Like, when should we give feedback, and when should we check ourselves at the door? Then the second thing is, there is definitely times when people need to be given feedback on how they can improve, how they can do things better. And that's what we're paid for as leaders to do, right? Is our experience, our wisdom, and the things that we've learned are of value. But there's a way that, you know, there's ways that you can do that really well, and there's ways that you can do that really badly. And I've certainly experienced some of the ways that you could do that badly. And I've learned I've been taught how to do that quite well. I mean, let's just think about some of the, you know, the bits of feedback that I've either had given to me or I've heard from my friends that have been given to them. There was one bit of feedback. Somebody go, I'm going to change all the names here, but this is just an example of you know, for me, like the worst feedback ever. You know, and the feedback that they got from their boss was, you know, their name was, let's make up a name, Susie, right? Their name was Susie, and the feedback they got was, you know, that the problem is you're just a bit too Susie, and you know, like. What? What can I do with that? Like, that is the least actionable, least useful feedback. Like, can you? And this was real that somebody got at a company that shall remain nameless, and they shall remain nameless. But you know, that's the extent of what some leaders in tech are thinking is acceptable ways to give feedback to people. And that's clearly, you know, an awful way to do it.
Yeah, what do you take from that? Just go back and be reborn?
Yeah. so if you want, I'll go through maybe the framework that sort of I've been taught really. And so When I think about giving feedback, and maybe we can come back later to the when we shouldn't be giving feedback, when we should check ourselves at the door, you know, as leaders. And but let's imagine we've got somebody that we think needs to maybe change their behavior a little bit. The areas I mainly think about it is firstly, feedback needs to be really timely, right? There's nothing worse than waiting 6 months till an end of year review, you know, or a mid-year review and going, oh, by the way, there's this thing that you did 6 months ago. So it needs to be really timely. Second thing I would say is it needs to be really specific, you know, and you may have, you know, found yourself sometimes sort of thinking, these people, you know, they're a bit like this and they do these sorts of things. But actually, that's a really bad way to give feedback, is, you know, to talk in generics. What you want to talk is really specific. You know, there was this scenario, this was the thing that you did. So let's talk about specifics. And then the third thing I'd say is, when you need to give feedback, is to talk about the behavior that you observed, not the judgment that you have ascribed to that thing that you've seen. So, for example, a very specific behavior might be when you pointed your finger, you know, when you pointed your finger at somebody. And for those that, you know, you can't see, but I'm pointing my finger at Mark here, aggressively, you know. And so that might be a subjective word that is, you know, when you pointed your finger and you raised your voice, you were very aggressive. Aggressive is a very subjective thing, whereas when you pointed your finger and raised your voice, that's a very behavioral thing. And so when you give feedback, you want to try and give it on the behaviors that you observed, not the judgment that you have ascribed based on your background and your culture and what you think. So those are some of the things. And then the final thing, and then I promise I'll shut up, because this is the really good bit that I got taught. I went on a course years ago by a chap called Vin Ray, and he's got his own Wikipedia page, so you can look him up. But he works for the BBC, and he was a producer for the BBC and works in newsrooms. And so he would work with a lot of behind the camera with a lot of journalists. So perhaps people with maybe some big egos, that kind of stuff. And he said, this is a great way to give feedback. And he said, it's the WIP framework. So W stands for when, I is the impact, and T is therefore. So, you know, taking into consideration the things I said before, you know, so when you pointed your finger and you raised your voice, the impact of that was, you know, I thought you were being a bit aggressive towards me. The impact was I got a little bit scared, if I'm honest. I felt disrespected and I felt like I didn't really want to work with you at that point. You know, therefore, next time we have a conversation, maybe can we try and keep things a bit calmer? And I'd suggest you think about how you manage your body so that you don't point at me and raise your voice. For example, as a little example, let me pause. I've gone on forever.
No, but please do. You know, this is a very chatty podcast, as you know. And yeah, you know, this is important, because getting it wrong, as much as you want to grow people and make people better, get it wrong and you do the opposite. You turn people off to the great things that could lay in front of them. You turn them off to the company. That someone said, no one leaves bad companies, they leave bad bosses. I don't know, that's not quite true, but there's elements of truth to it. Persuading people, Mark, I know that you are perhaps one of the most clued up people that I know, and has actually used some AI tools to get great things done. It's been quite a journey of learning for me, seeing what's possible. How have you found you've been able to persuade people, you know, take them on that journey from when they went, AI, yeah, but no, come on. Yeah. And then, but I know, I mean, we did it. You took me on that journey of showing me what AI could do. And then at the end, I'm like, I think I was wrong. But talk to us then about giving feedback and helping people learn things that.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting, you know, as Ben has said, you look at the human element of it, right? And, it is kind of ingrained in us that change is a bad thing, right? It's kind of, we're hardwired to see change as risk. And I think a lot of people are skeptical of tech over the years about creating these wonderful panaceas. I mean, at the end of the day, if you think about when tech started back in the 60s, we shouldn't really be working because we should have computers and robots doing it all for us, right? That was kind of the dream back then, I guess. And I think when you look at it, people are innately skeptical of the tech. And one of the things that I've found around the use of generative AI was in the pre-sales world, and I know this is a subject very close to your heart as well, Ben, around sort of technical storytelling, is I think we spend so much of our time in left brain mode that right brain doesn't kick in. And I think I've got that round the right way. Left logic, right's rhythm, and I think. But I think therefore that when you look at a use case for generative AI, storytelling, for example, is a fantastic one, because you can take your knowledge and it's hard facts, it's proper factual based logical knowledge about technology. But how do you craft that into something that will engage another human? And I think therefore you need to do your audience research, and you need to understand the behavioral science of storytelling. Storytelling has been around since we gathered around fires in caves. That is how we communicate as a species. And that's how people remember, is through stories. And I think in the world of pre-sales, we've kind of not really had to do that too much. And I've found that generative AI is a huge, huge help in being able to create a draft piece of content. And I think, therefore, that skepticism then kicks in. And as we were chatting beforehand, it's almost kind of like, dude, I think it's going to take a while before we just punch numbers into people. Probably did some double checking, etc. And I think that's going to be a big journey with generative AI as well. So understanding the fundamentals of things like storytelling, understanding a story arc, understanding some basic principles like a hero's journey, in order to be able to then use these tools to help craft that content is going to be essential.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's a good point. It's really interesting the way that you made that argument. I don't know if all the listeners were noticing there, but what you obviously do quite naturally is instead of providing your opinion, because it's your opinion, you are providing the facts and the information and the result of the outcomes for the change that you're promoting there. And so that's something that we can do. So Ben, you had the good framework, but also taking the personal element out of it, even more so. So not just saying, I didn't like the way you did that, or I'd prefer you to do it this way. You only get a few of those, and you've got to have built up a lot of trust with whomever it is that you're working with, and make sure that if you're going to do that, expect the same back as well, right? So make sure that they can talk to you in the same way and that you're ready for that. You can't expect it just to be a one-way street. So if you're going to then persuade someone to do something, talking about the outcomes, sort of when it is, the impact, and therefore the result, but also going over the benefits. Really, really powerful about giving feedback. What about any experience that neither of you could advise on when you've had the option to give feedback to someone and you've decided not because it would be it's better that they learn through that experience, and you know that the piece of work that you've asked them to do, you could do better, but they've worked really hard on something. Sometimes what you wanted them to do is do the work and feel the pain and understand, feel the sense of achievement, even if it's not actually as good as he wanted?
Can I have a go at answering that, Mark? I'm drinking a cup of tea here from a mug that I got for Christmas. I can show you on the camera. No one else can see this. So I'll read it out. It says, enjoy the journey. The destination will follow. You know, it's got a camper van on it. You know, it's from Fat Face or whatever it is. Now, the reason I say that, and it's just pure luck that I'm drinking from this mug, is I think there's two things that are important here. There's the destination and there's the outcome. And there is the journey. And sometimes when you're leading people, actually, the outcome is what's really important. Okay. So the quality of the thing that you deliver, you know, is going to go to customers. That outcome must be at a bar that we set, that we agree, whatever it might be. Sometimes actually the outcome isn't the bit that's the important. The bit that's important is the journey. And that journey are the things you learn, the things that you get wrong, the things that you, that the mistakes that you make. And so sometimes I think we need to think a little bit about, when is it our job as a leader to help somebody go on a journey because we know that this will help them grow? And when do we need to go, oh, the fact that they've just plagiarized that from AI means that the outcome is brilliant. That's fine, because I only cared about the outcome. I didn't care about the journey for this particular situation.
I think that's a really great way of saying it, Ben. I love that, actually, because I think the role of a leader is around coaching the journey. And I know the word coaching gets used quite a lot these days in a business context, but I actually do coaching on a volunteer basis. I've done it for a number of years with kids rugby. And if I look at the topic that we're even talking about just now around feedback, the kids I'm currently coaching are about 14 years of age. And we do video analysis with the kids now. And many of the clubs that we go to, they'll use a video cam, and I'm not sponsored by Vio or anything like that. I'm sure others are available. But these video cams go up on a big high mast. They use AI, it uses ball tracking. And many clubs are now recording even youth rugby matches so that you can provide feedback to individuals. And you know, our boys are at a stage now where they're playing certain plays. We've got a playbook. You're expecting them to do certain things in certain situations, but things change within a second on that field. So whatever you're doing in playbooks, etc., even at teaching kids. But the thing that's just sparking in my mind is, this is a generation that's receiving feedback as 14-year-old kids running around a field chasing an egg. When they come into the workplace 10 years from now, they're going to have been used to a high degree of data and feedback in order to enhance performance. And it is just about having that performance mindset, right? You know, the old saying about what gets measured gets managed. And I think that's where the role of a leader is to then apply the emotional intelligence to how do you use that information to affect the journey.
Hmm. Rather groundbreaking stuff there using VOCAM. I don't know much about it, but it's easy to draw analogies between VOCAM and Gong.
Very similar.
You know, it is basically a way in which there is a method of recording the activities of the players in the field as they play, and then reviewing the activities that they did, working out the different playbooks.
Even in PowerPoint now, I don't know if you ever used the presentation coach, I think it's called, in PowerPoint.
Yeah.
It's even available in Teams now that you can, in a live Teams call, you can have presenter coach, and it'll tell you if you're using filler words and if your speech rate is not enough or if you're too monotone, etc. So you're getting in-line feedback in a call.
Yeah, yeah. And that's got to be hard to deal with, hasn't it? You know, that's a skill in its own right, to be taking live, real-time feedback from an AI changing your behavior and keeping like, what am I supposed to be saying? Like, what was the story I was telling? I'm telling it too quick. That's a skill in its own right, I reckon.
Changing the wheel while the car's moving.
Yeah.
Where's the who do you think you are button for Gong and all the rest of it? But so as we come into to the last few minutes of the episode, we've covered a lot of ground here and we've gotten a lot of feedback. Talking of feedback, we want feedback, please. So do come and post on LinkedIn. You can find Mark McKinley on LinkedIn, meet Mark Green on LinkedIn, Ben Pierce also on LinkedIn. What would we do without LinkedIn? But certainly the key takeaway that I'm going to take away from this is thank you, Ben, for introducing us to the WIT method. When do things happen? You know, when was it? What was the impact? And therefore, what is the result out of it? And what are we going to do? We could go on for ages about all of this. I would mention that there's one called Grow, which I used to have at the wallpaper of my screen. And it was basically, if anyone came to me and asked for something, I helped them say, okay, well, what's the situation? What's the current status? What are you doing about it? And do you need any help? Who are you going to get that from? And as a way to help give feedback to people that are asking for it, I think that's good. But Mark, that's a really good point you made about doing it in mid-call. Yeah, I think people, as they enter the workforce, will just get used to these in-line coaches with their work streams. We won't have to give them feedback up like at the end of the week or the end of the month. It will just be they'll get the score for the call when they finish, and they'll have to do better next time. What actionable insights, Mark, Ben, can people take away, do you think?
For me, I do love a good framework. I'm going to repeat what Mark said there about the WIT framework. The fact that you even told the story about its origins from coming from the BBC, etc., makes you remember it all the more, right? So I see what you did there, Ben. but I do love a good framework, and I have taken that, and it's now committed to my personal knowledge management system in Obsidian. So I shall be looking to leverage that one in the future.
Yeah, brilliant. I mean, like I say, I've stolen it. What I will say is I've used this for 10 years in management, and I would say it is really useful. The other times that I've used it that can be really useful is conflict management. So I don't know if you've ever had a situation where you've got a couple of people in your team or in your org that don't get on so well, and actually getting them to sit down and both do this and coach them what this framework is, and then how they can do that. Right, this is the thing that you do that's really winding me up, and they do it the same. You know, and we try and do it as unemotionally and as objectively as possible. I've done that a couple of times, and it worked to worked to dream. So yeah. I love, like you, a framework, WIT. I can just think that in my brain, think it through, write, you know, spend a couple of seconds, you know, just thinking what it means. And it's such a useful way to help people.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, let's wrap up. Thank you so much, everyone, for coming and listening. We'd love to know where you're listening. Mark's a big fan of walking the dog. Ben has got some amazingly decent headphones, so I imagine he listens to everything with those. We will be back on the airwaves very soon, joined, I'm sure, by Adam, who is off today. Mark, welcome as an official co-host. It's excellent to have you on board. And for everybody else, thank you for listening to Two Pre-Sales in a Pod. We will be on again very soon. Thanks.